Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. It's almost New Year's, and you know what that means. It's been almost a year since you broke your promise to finally get in shape. But hope springs eternal, so this week it's nothing but tips and tricks on how to improve the physical you. With a show devoted to health and wellness. We're going to make you sweat. Plus, Dave Barry joins us to tell us about his daily regimen of Pop Rocks and whiskey. And Carl Castle introduces his line of Castle 90X workout DVDs.
You could have a body like mine.
You got 5 minutes to squeeze into your spandex, because our show starts right after the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. A new poll in Iowa, the latest before the Republican presidential caucus Tuesday, shows a tight race, with former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney holding a very slim, statistically insignificant lead. NPR's Don Gagne reports.
The Des Moines Register poll puts Romney at 24%, Congressman Ron Paul at 22%, and former Senator Rick Santorum moving up with 15%. Yesterday, Romney continued his attacks on President Obama and burnished his conservative credentials on the topic of immigration and the DREAM Act, which would create a path to citizenship for children of illegal immigrants.
The question is, if I were elected and Congress were to pass the DREAM Act, would I veto it? And the answer is yes.
Romney spoke there in the city of Lamar's. He's campaigning hard in the final days, a change from earlier in the fall when his events here were rare. Don Gagne, NPR News, Des Moines.
U.S. troops in Afghanistan are looking forward to the new year. NPR's Rachel Martin says 23,000 of them will be coming home by the end of the summer.
The top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, General John Allen, has until March to come up with a plan to draw down the remaining 23,000 so-called surge troops and bring them home. The first 10,000 left Afghanistan late last year. U.S. and NATO forces will spend more time in 2012 training Afghan security forces, letting them take the lead in operations. By 2014, all U.S. troops are supposed to be out of the country, and Afghan forces will be expected to take over security operations. Rachel Martin, NPR News, Washington.
State television in Iran claims the Iranians test-fired a medium-range surface-to-air missile in international waters near the Strait of Hormuz. The report did not provide many details, such as when it happened, except that it occurred during a 10-day military exercise. Also today, Iran claims that scientists have produced the nation's first nuclear fuel rod, a tube containing enriched uranium that provides fuel for nuclear reactors. Hundreds of Egyptians held protests in Cairo and Alexandria on the eve of the first anniversary of a church bombing. NPR's Soraya Sahardi-Nelson reports from Cairo. The protesters want to know who bombed the church, killing 21 worshippers, as they left a New Year's Eve mass.
No suspects are in custody 1 year after the fatal bombing of the Coptic Christian church in the northern port city of Alexandria. About 40 people were arrested within days of the attack, but they were released weeks later when it was discovered that some of their confessions were obtained under duress. One of the accused men died of a beating while in police custody. Since then, the investigation has fizzled. Initially, Hosni Mubarak's government blamed the bombing on groups linked to Al-Qaeda and other foreign terrorists, but many protesters believe Mubarak's former interior minister was involved. He's on trial in connection with the death of 800 other people killed during demonstrations that forced Mubarak from power. Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson, NPR News, Cairo.
This is NPR News from Washington. North Korea released its annual New Year's message, this year with a new leader, Kim Jong-un, the youngest son of the late Kim Jong-il. The statement promised to resolve food shortages while bolstering the military. It pledged support to the new leader, saying the whole party, the entire army, and all the people will become human shields in defending Kim Jong-un unto death. Thousands of warriors have attacked a remote town in newly independent South Sudan, which is home to a rival tribe, in a dispute apparently triggered by kettle rustling. NPR's Afebia Quistarkton reports.
A military spokesman from South Sudan says 6,000 fighters from the Lu Nuer tribe have overrun the town of Pibor in Jonglei State, torching the hospital and houses. Despite the presence of UN peacekeeping reinforcements and the South Sudanese army, thousands of Pibor residents from the Murle tribe had already fled their homes. They had anticipated violence and revenge attacks as rival warriors marched on the town. South Sudan's vice president is trying to mediate between the two tribes in a quarrel sparked by cattle raiding that has claimed about 1,000 lives in Jonglei in recent months. Ofebia Quistockton, NPR News, Accra.
A NASA spacecraft is circling the moon today on a mission to gather information about the body's evolution. It successfully entered the moon's atmosphere yesterday. A second probe will join it today. Both were launched into space 3.5 months ago and will orbit the moon just 34 miles above the surface until at least June. One of the questions scientists hope they'll be able to answer is why the far side of the moon has more craters than the near side. I'm Noor Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Intuit. With Intuit Payroll, small businesses can pay employees, file tax forms, and manage payroll. Learn more at payroll.com.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Adrian Arsht Center in Miami, Florida, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, everybody. We got a great show for you today. Dave Barry, the funniest man in Florida, will be here later to play our games. This week on our show, though, we're going to try something different. Our show, for once, is actually going to be good for you. It is. It's all about health, physical, mental health. But like all health products, our show is required to come with a warning.
Use as directed and consult your doctor before listening. If you find yourself experiencing drowsiness, sleepiness, or general malaise, you may have been listening to public radio.
So please refrain from operating heavy machinery. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Laura calling from Acton, Massachusetts.
Oh, what do you do there in Acton?
I'm actually, as of this morning, I'm a freshly re-employed computer programmer.
There you go.
Congratulations.
Wow. Good
well
for
done.
You. What's the new gig? What do you care? It's a job, right?
Darn right.
Yeah. Well, welcome, Laura, to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, an alum of Second City and the Colbert Report, Mr. Peter Gross is here.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Laura.
Next, a blogger and a deputy editor over at the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, Laura.
Finally, it's author and humorist, Mr. Tom Beaudet.
Yay, Tom.
Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Well, Laura, it's great to have you. We have asked you here to play a new game that we are calling...
I shall call this new disease acute carlitosis.
As our society has progressed over the years, we've conquered many diseases. For example, when's the last time you heard of someone suffering from gladiator's elbow? But with new advances come new ailments. Carl is going to describe the symptoms of some very real new illnesses and syndromes we found in the news or in the medical literature. Your job, guess the cause. Do that 2 times out of 3. You'll win our prize, Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to do this?
I'm ready to try.
All right, so imagine if you are Carl going to his doctor, and he goes in and he describes the following symptoms.
Doctor,
I have this sensation people are constantly trying to get in touch with me, even though no one is. And I feel an ever-present tingling in my pants. Not that tingling, a different one. It even happens in airplane mode.
Carl was describing a malady afflicting people who use what a lot?
Cell phones.
That's right. It's called, and again, this is real, it's called phantom vibration syndrome. As one neurologist put it, quote, if you use your cell phone a lot, it becomes part of you, unquote. Pretty soon, you and your phone are finishing each other's sentences. You're dressing alike. You both wear grooved rubber sleeves. And then what happens is you start thinking that your cell phone is vibrating when it isn't. You're constantly grabbing at your pants and pockets when there's no need to do so.
It follows you, too. It follows, like, around your body where you move your cell phone. Because I had that happen to me a lot. It was always in my left front pocket. And then I switched it to my right front pocket. And then all of a sudden it was in my right front
pocket.
So
you, like, imagine the...
Oh, yeah.
So this is something you guys are familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it was both. Because then my body was like, it could be in either pocket, man. You don't know.
Yeah.
I have a syndrome where I feel like I'm important. Therefore, yeah, that when my phone actually rings, I think that it's important and not like a sales call or my wife telling me to pick up milk.
Or nobody at all. That's the problem. I mean, nobody is actually calling or texting us, and we think they are.
No, if you want somebody to call, you walk into the men's room at an airport. That will make your phone ring.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that never works for me.
You're doing it wrong.
All right, Carl, what's your next problem?
Doctor, some days I feel like a real housewife of Beverly Hills. Some days I feel like a bachelor. Other days I feel like an ice road trucker. What's wrong with me?
Here, Carl might be suffering from a syndrome where patients' lives begin to imitate what?
Reality TV.
Yes, indeed. The crazed, over-the-top rage, drama, and lust that we see in reality TV. You know, shows like Jersey Shore, Real Housewives, C-SPAN. That has apparently become the new normal. Behavioral psychologists have noted that people who watch a lot of reality TV feel disappointed if their reality isn't as exciting or depraved, so they start upping the ante. I mean, you feel like a failure if your night out with friends doesn't end with either a fist fight, jail, or you passed out pantsless in a gutter. WWJD now means what would JWoww do?
A lot of more people naming their stomachs also.
Yes, like what, the situation.
What is that? What is that?
The
from?
Situation is that fellow on the Jersey Shore who's got a real situation going on in his midsection. So yeah. He dubbed it the situation.
Oh, boy, but I'm so gleefully ignorant.
He's muscular and imaginative in that regard.
Yeah.
Do you have a name for your abdomen?
Me?
Yes.
Yeah, Charles. I'm more formal, though. Never Charlie. Never Charlie.
No.
So dignified.
I must address it in the formal manner, especially when I spill chili on it.
Carl, any more complaints?
Doctor, I've done it on a stool. I've done it on a chair. I've done it on a couch. I've done it on a love seat. I once even did it on a horse. Now, you're telling me I have to stop?
I don't know what you're thinking, but it turns out something very common that Carl started doing as a very young man is bad for him. In fact, it's bad for all of us. What is it?
I don't watch enough TV.
Clearly not. There's nothing to do with TV. It's a physical thing that people do all day, usually in their offices.
Sometimes. Breathing?
No, sometimes. Breathing is terrible for you. Stop! No, that's actually almost as bad. The problem is, and the reason people have noticed this is now in the early 21st century, humans are doing this more than ever. What with all the things there are to do it in front of. Computers, TVs.
Sitting!
Yes!
Yeah.
I didn't get that either, Laura.
That's
me neither.
Well, so obvious. And you're doing it. You're sitting yourself to an early grave, Tom.
I thought it was slouching.
No, it's sitting. You know, everybody knew that sitting is bad for you because it means when you're sitting, you're not going out and exercising. Fine. But new studies show that even if you exercise an hour a day, sitting down for 6 to 8 hours the rest of the day still is going to kill you. Our chairs hate us and want us dead. finally to be free of the weighty oppressors. It's something to do with the bad effect complete muscular relaxation has on our physical systems. But in the meantime, there's actually treatment for this. You'll be happy to know the good people at GlaxoSmithKline and Pfizer have joined forces for Standagra. Ask your doctor if you're healthy enough for standing.
What happens if you stand for more than 4 hours?
Then somebody stole your chair. Carl, how did Laura do in our quiz?
Laura, you had 3 correct answers, so that means you win our prize. Congratulations.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing, Laura.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, pretty baby.
You can't sit up.
Don't you hear the drummer thumping?
You can't sit up.
You gotta shake it like a crazy.
You can't sit up.
'Cause the band is saying something.
We want to remind everyone they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions. Now, this week, as we've said, they're all about health and fitness. Tom, nutritionists at Carnegie Mellon University have revealed the secret to staying thin. It has nothing to do with going to the gym or eating salads. They say you should just do what?
I'm going to go on a limb here and say eat less.
Well, it's a trick so as to make yourself eat less, specifically. It's a method you can use to eat less.
Put fewer things in your mouth.
It's like...
I need a hint.
It's like you're familiar with the mind's eye. This is the mind's mouth.
Oh, imagine it tastes bad.
No.
Imagine it...
I'll give it to you. It's basically you imagine yourself eating.
But you are eating.
Not yet. This is what you do. All right, this is how it works. So imagine, everybody can do this. Imagine a delicious meal, whatever it is. Picture digging into a heaping plate of whatever it is you love. Now stop. Thought. It's what's for dinner. According to the journal Science, the act of imagining, chewing, and swallowing specific foods is enough to satisfy your cravings, and thus you'll eat less real food and thus lose weight.
So, yeah, that's how I work out, too.
Yeah, right. You see, just sit there and you go, feeling the burn, feeling the burn.
Yeah.
Usually while eating.
Right.
Now, many are dubious of this sort of think method, if you will.
I'm one of them.
You are. Because thinking about burritos usually leads to eating burritos.
Yeah.
Right, you know. And, of course, in severe cases, thinking about burritos can lead to a brain fart. But... The idea is like there's a mental reason to eat, which is that you want to satisfy your mental cravings for food. But these apparently can be satisfied by simple visualization.
But what about your actual physical cravings for food, which are actual and you need food to live?
Well, you're not supposed to just think of food. You're supposed to think of food.
Oh, well, you didn't say that. No, you didn't say that. You made it sound like all we're supposed to do is think of food and we'll live forever. Your words.
It's great. It's okay if you get real hungry, though. You can always go back for second thoughts. Coming up, it's win or go home on a sporty bluff. The listener call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play, and Dave Barry joins us to play Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and eSurance, offering mobile apps that let users submit accident claims at the scene. More at eSurance.com. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm reporter Elise Spiegel, and I think it's sometimes easy to take for granted what comes out of the radio. But as someone who works here, I'll tell you that many of the stories that you hear on NPR involve days, weeks of working and thinking and sweating over details that go by so fast, most people hardly even notice them. And that's what I love about this place. It's almost irrational, the commitment to excellence. This is NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudette, Peter Gross, and Kerry O'Connor. And here again is your host at the Adrian Arch Center in Miami, Florida, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you all so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Zelda Menard. I'm calling from Seattle, Washington.
Hey, Zelda. How are you?
Good.
That's a great name. I've never met... I don't know if I've met anybody named Zelda outside of video games, so I'm really pleased to meet you. Well, welcome to the show, Zelda. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Zelda's topic?
Win or die trying, or I'll kill you myself.
Owners and coaches will do anything to make sure their team wins, whether it's bringing in a star player, paying their players better, or secretly injecting them with anabolic horse roids. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of teams going to unusual lengths to achieve victory, only one of which is true. Pick that real one, you will win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yep.
All right. First up, let's hear from Peter Gross.
It was late January 2010, and perennial underdogs, the New Orleans Saints, were heading to their first Super Bowl. Owner Tom Benson believed in his team, but he was just superstitious enough to go the extra mile. So when a local voodoo priest named Daruk Thibodeau offered to put a curse on Indianapolis Colts quarterback Peyton Manning, Benson cautiously accepted. Mr. Thibodeau invited members of the Saints organization to attend the ritual at his shack in rural Temple Bay, Louisiana, where the following occurred. A rooster wearing a miniature version of Manning's number 18 Colts jersey was placed into the center of a pit, along with a rattlesnake painted black and gold representing Saints linebacker Jonathan Vilma, that swiftly attacked the rooster, sending a lethal dose of venom into its jugular. Horrified members of the Saints staff left in shock and quickly disassociated themselves with Thibodeau. But after the Saints intercepted Manning in the fourth quarter to seal their Super Bowl win, Thibodeau said, quote, "Y'all can pretend that curse didn't work, but I know better."
Voodoo before the New Orleans Saints Super Bowl. Your next story of the team pushing the envelope comes from Kerry O'Connor.
You know how you're intently watching your favorite team on TV and you leave the room to get more nachos? And when you get back, your team's suddenly losing? You could be onto something there. Reports have surfaced that the now divorcing skillionaire owners of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Frank and Jamie McCourt, hired a 71-year-old Russian spiritual healer to think good thoughts about the Dodgers. This Rasputin of Chavez Ravine is Vladimir Spunt, who was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars over 5 years to sit in front of his TV in Boston and beam his special V energy across 3,000 miles to the Dodgers. "It is very big work," he said. "I like to win."
A Russian spiritualist sending positive energy to the Dodgers from thousands of miles away. Your last story of doing what it takes to win comes from Tom Baudette.
David Laidlaw had led his self-styled Worcester Gryffindors Pee-wee hockey team through the semifinals with some good old-fashioned coaching and, he admitted later under oath, caffeinated juice boxes. But last week's regional championship in Springfield, Massachusetts, called for some special motivation. Taking a cue from his 6 and 7-year-old players' fascination with the Harry Potter stories, Laidlaw lined up his team in the Springfield train station and pointed to a brick wall. "You kids win this championship," he told them, "and you'll walk through this wall like Harry Potter and his pals and take that magic train straight to Hogwarts. The kids loved their coach, of course, and believed everything he said. And through luck and pluck and some well-placed pucks, the Gryffindors returned to the station trophy in hand. Two broken noses and a minor concussion later, bystanders intervened to restrain the young champs from continuing to hurl themselves at the bricks. Charged with child endangerment, Coach Laidlaw expressed no regrets. "Look, they were going to find out it's all make-believe anyway. Why not get something out of it before they wise up?"
All right. So somebody did one of these things to help their team. Was it from Peter Gross, the management of the New Orleans Saints, bringing in a voodoo doctor? From Kerry O'Connor, the owners of the L.A. Dodgers, hiring a Russian psychic to send positive mental beams to them from watching on TV? Or from Tom Beaudet, a peewee hockey coach, promising the kids that if they win, they all get to go to Hogwarts? Which is the real story from the world
Well,
of sports?
I'm partial to Massachusetts as my home state, but I'm going to go with the first one, the voodoo, because I've read Tori Spelling's biographies, and I know it's true. She goes to voodoo people.
She go. Oh, that explains her whole career, I guess.
Yeah.
So you're going to go with Peter Gross's story by way of Tori Spelling.
Yep.
So that's your story, the story of the voodoo. Well, we spoke to a sports writer who, in fact, covered this story.
Dr. Spunt was on the Dodgers payroll for 5 years, and he claimed that he could use his healing energy to send positive vibes, if you will, from Boston all the way to Los Angeles.
That was Bill Shaken. He's a sports reporter for the L.A. Times, explaining how, in fact, the L.A. Dodgers hired a Russian psychic. So I'm sorry you didn't win, but you earned a point for Peter. And you know why? Because Peter killed the chicken. It was almost a voodoo ritual there to cause you to choose him. It was very effective and evil. Well, thank you so much for playing, Zelda. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Zelda. And now the game where we invite on interesting people and try to keep it interesting. Our guest does something a lot of humor columnists don't. He actually writes funny things, and lots of it. He's been churning it out for more than 25 years, writing hundreds of columns and more than 30 books. He won a Pulitzer Prize in 1988, which for us is what finally legitimized the Pulitzer Prizes. Miami's own Dave Barry, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. How are you? You're good?
Doing well, and you?
I'm fine. Good. I'm good now. It's very exciting to be here in Florida.
It's a good place to be now.
It is. Yeah. Now?
Now. But in general. Now.
In general, yeah. Do you have any tips for people who come to Florida for the first time?
Don't drive. Miami in particular, when I first got here, I thought, nobody here knows the traffic laws. And I learned over the years, everyone here is driving according to the traffic laws of his or her individual country of origin.
Right.
You know, and there are apparently are countries where it's traditional to put on your left turn signal first thing in the morning. You know? Maybe put it on the night before to make sure it's not.
There are countries that get points for pedestrians hit, so they're out there.
We have no pedestrians here.
No.
They were wiped out years ago. I also advise people not to take public transportation. It's kind of weird.
Wait a minute, hold on. So you can't drive, you shouldn't drive.
Right.
There are no pedestrians.
Right.
And you shouldn't take public transportation.
Right, you're listening. Well, you're kidding.
All right, basically, everybody's huddled in their home.
Well, we have this thing, it's called Metro Rail and People Mover.
Yeah.
And we don't know how to get up on that thing.
Yeah, I've seen this.
It goes by.
These are very adorable little electric cars.
I've lived here. I've never met a soul who's ridden on that thing. And you think, I wonder who they are and how they get there. Maybe, are they even from our solar system? You know, whoever they... But this is an absolutely true story. This happened year before last. There were two men, homeless gentlemen, and they were fishing in Biscayne Bay. And they caught a nurse shark, six-foot-long nurse shark.
Right.
And they decided that they would sell it to a fish wholesaler. There are fish wholesalers in downtown Miami that service the restaurants there. But they didn't have a car. And it's a long walk with a shark that size.
Right, sure. that size.
So they elected to take public transportation.
Sure.
This was rush hour. And they got on the People Mover here in downtown Miami.
Right.
And the shark was not dead at this time. put the shark line, and it's not really an environment for a shark. And I got an email from a woman who was a commuter, and she snapped a picture with her camera and emailed it to me. So there's a shark on the people mover, you know. So I lived here a long time, and I never thought I would see that. But we could have had a situation where a person was attacked by a shark on people mover. Now, tragically, we did not.
Yeah.
It would have been great.
I love the idea that somebody gets onto their public transportation, their people mover, and they say, a shark. And their first thought is not to scream,
no,
but to say, I shall send a photo of this to Dave Barry.
Right. Yeah. So it's a little thing we call civic duty.
I understand. Now, this show, as you might have heard, is devoted to topics of health.
Right.
Are there any health and safety concerns particular to South Florida, it being such a tropical and strange place?
Well, we have a lot of wildlife here.
You do?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what kind of cockroaches you have where you live.
Right.
But I came here from the north where, cockroaches, if you, they're in the kitchen, whatever they're doing, but if you come in, they go, whoa, and they skitter away. Here, they're like, hey! Turn out the light, we're eating,
we're walking here, we're walking here.
when they back up, they go, they're big. So we have them. When I first moved here, I lived in a neighborhood that had crabs. I was not used to that. Not crabgrass, crabs.
Right.
And they would mate. I got here, yeah, well, how do you think we get crabs? Come on.
I have no idea.
I got here during crab mating season, and they're like all, when I went out to get the paper, they'd be all over the lawn, and they're hostile.
They're snapping at you.
I think they think like you want their woman.
She's mine.
Yeah, I don't want your woman. Your woman's a crab. You know? Which just makes them even angrier because they know it's true.
Yeah, I know. they're defensive out of their hurts.
I don't blame them.
Right. With all these things crawling in and around and all these other madnesses, do you ever get tempted to leave Florida and go someplace sane?
No, because my wife won't let me.
Really?
Yeah. My wife is really rooted here. She is she's Cuban Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Juban, they call them.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, yes, yeah, see the Jubans? And they didn't come over on rafts. They parted the Caribbean.
Right.
And so she, between the Jewish part and the Cuban part, is related to every single person in probably a lot in Florida.
Yeah.
And, so we're never leaving. No.
You can't go.
No.
Would you want to?
No, I like it here. I mean, I've never lived any place less boring in my life.
Yeah. This is, and it gives you material.
Oh my God! I don't know why we have a government here if not to keep me, abused. I've always said what we should do here, our system of government.
Yeah.
We could streamline it if we just, when they got elected, we'd swear them in and indict them in one ceremony.
Yeah. And, save time.
Yeah.
Dave Barry, we've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
You Can Have a Body Like Mine.
So these days, you can't turn on your TV without seeing some oiled-up model using some ridiculous piece of mail-order fitness equipment. And for that, we can thank one Jerry Wilson. He was the inventor of both the Soloflex exercise machine back in 1978 and the program-length infomercial, which he created to sell those machines. Now, we're going to ask you three questions about the history of Soloflex, taken from Mr. Wilson's own very frank memoir. Carl, who is Dave Barry playing for?
Dave is playing for Ruth Shack of Miami, Florida.
All right.
Ruth, so, I'm sorry, Ruth, whatever.
So he invented Soloflex. He invented the commercials to sell it, and, of course, they started flying out the door. But the problem was the factory workers couldn't keep up with the demand for the machines, so how did Mr. Wilson motivate them to keep cranking them out? A, he promised he would adopt the hardest worker and make him or her his heir. B, he offered a date with either or both of the Soloflex TV models to the hardest worker. Or C, he threatened all the workers with a shotgun.
Well, I'm sure it's not C. I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B? He said, take a look at those models. You get to date anyone you want. It was actually the shotgun. He says in his book that he demonstrated his dedication to meeting production goals by blowing the time clock off the wall with the shotgun. Here is your next question. Soloflex makes some interesting claims as to their role in the fitness craze. For example, the company claims what? That if you added up all the body weight they had helped people to lose, you would have the population of Sacramento, California. B, that they own the trademark on the phrase exercise and eat right. Or C, they claim that just repeating the word Soloflex over and over again as a mantra can improve your physique.
I'm going with B.
You're going to go with B?
Yes.
They own the trademark? You're
yes.
Right. They say that's theirs. Tell somebody to exercise and eat right. You owe Soloflex a quarter. All right. This is very exciting. You get this last one right, you will win. Once you have achieved your perfect body, you can then use your Soloflex to do what? A, brew beer. B, tan hides. Or C, weave rugs.
C.
You're going to go for weaving rugs?
Yes.
I love that idea. You'd be like, you'd have the thing, and then you'd sit down there after you're sort of oiled and muscular and start weaving lovely Navajo rugs. I'm being skeptical is what I'm doing.
I get that. I'm going with A.
I think you're right. Brew beer. apparently, according to homebrew... the discussion boards, the shape of the Soloflex frame is perfect for holding up your distillery equipment and your brewing equipment. So you can brew beer on your Soloflex. Carl, how did our guest, Dave Barry, do in our quiz?
Dave had two correct answers, and that's good enough to win for Ruth Shack.
Well done. Dave Barry is a former columnist with Miami Herald, an incredibly prolific author, and the funniest guy in this room. Dave Barry, thank you so much for being with us today. Dave Barry, ladies and gentlemen. In just a minute, Carl strikes a downward dog pose in our listener limerick challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting research in how social factors like housing and jobs affect health. Learn more at rwjf.org. The Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org. And the George Lucas Educational Foundation, celebrating 20 years of being a source for what works in education. More at edutopia.org. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Ari Shapiro, NPR's White House correspondent. When I was growing up, I never dreamed of just being a journalist. I dreamed of working for NPR. Here's why. My colleagues and I want to do more than just bring you the news. We want to hold you fast to your radio with stories so compelling they make you late for work. We want to be your water cooler chatter and your dinner table conversation. You are the reason for our passion. This is NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudette, Kerry O'Connor, and Peter Gross. And here again is your host at the Adrian Arched Center in Miami, Florida, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl diagnoses you with a severe case of rheumatitis in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you. They are, of course, all about health, fitness, sports, that sort of thing. Peter, we all have our own ways of relaxing, burning off stress. Some people like bubble baths and massage. One politician claims to have a unique and manly way of unwinding. It's former governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty. What does he do for stress relief?
And it's manly?
It's manly. It sort of involves violence, which is manly, and sports,
does
which
he
are manly.
Does he attend Ultimate Fighting Championships?
He does not attend.
Does he participate in wrestling?
No, it's something he likes to watch.
Hockey?
But he likes hockey only when
he likes watching the fights of
he
hockey?
Likes watching hockey fights. That's how he relaxes. He doesn't watch the whole game. He just wants to watch the fights. Pawlenty suffers from a bit of an image problem. He's mild-mannered and tame. He's trying to beef up his macho quotient. That's fine, but in his solution in his biography was to reveal this. He says he enjoys logging onto a website and, quote, watching two guys, gloves down, helmets off, pounding each other while the ref stands back and lets it happen, unquote.
Is this not going to do what he wants for his image?
Yeah. We tried going to the website he mentions, but you had to be a member to see the good stuff. Tom, a woman in Canada was charged with refusing to take a breathalyzer test when she was pulled over, but she successfully fought the charges when she explained that it wasn't that she refused to blow into the breathalyzer, it was what?
She didn't refuse. She elected not to.
No.
I
could, but I won't. No, it's not it. It was a physical problem.
Was she too drunk?
No.
Yeah.
I can't take your breathalyzer test. I'm hammered.
Blow to that thing? Yeah. There's four of them. One of them is the
should I do the middle one? What? No, she did look. I mean, she couldn't blow into the breathalyzer, but she did look 10 years younger.
She had plastic surgery.
She was Botoxed.
Oh.
And because she was Botoxed, she said she couldn't pucker enough to blow into the straw.
Wow. Kind of defeats the point of Botox.
Yeah, anyone who's ever been Novocained and tried to, like, you know, drink through a straw understands what this is like. Her name is Patty Ann Moore, and she says she was drinking fine. But as her doctor's note explained when she had to go to court, people with Botox are unable, quote, to wrap their lips around a straw or wide circumference such as a breathalyzer blow apparatus, unquote. The sympathetic judge threw the case out, and Moore said she was thrilled with her victory, which she plans to indicate with a smile in 6 to 8 months. Tom, doctors say you should be careful giving Tylenol to kids for a lot of reasons, but it turns out one of the very rare but real side effects of Tylenol in children might be what?
It makes the sinks really sticky. No, it is. It's just a noticed side effect.
Well, this is like you're talking about the child's syrup.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I'll give you a hint. It's sort of like a tickle in pill form.
Oh, it makes them giggly.
Yes, it makes them laugh excessively.
How could you tell?
No, don't laugh unless you can't help it. Excessive laughing.
Is that a real laugh or drug-induced?
Yeah, exactly. Well, excessive laughing syndrome is no joke. Hundreds of Americans suffer from it every year. In fact, we have a sufferer with us. In fact, it's a voice you may recognize if you're an NPR weekend listener. Ray, are you there?
Yes, I am.
That's great. And so we understand that you have a problem in your life from excessive laughter syndrome. Is this true?
Well, I don't suffer from the affliction myself, but I have a loved one. I wouldn't call him a loved one. A sibling.
You have a sibling?
Suffers. Yes, my brother, yes.
You're telling me that this excessive laughing doesn't run in the family?
No. As a matter of fact, I'm very serious, and I hardly laugh at all.
Yeah. You hardly laugh at all?
I hardly laugh at all.
Well, thank you, and we're sorry for your troubles.
Well, thank you for your sympathy, and I'm glad I was able to shed a little bit of light on this topic.
I appreciate that.
So long.
Bye-bye.
Keep laughing. Bye-bye.
That was Ray Maliazzi, ladies and gentlemen, also known as Click. Or Clack, I can never be sure. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank. But first, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Ashley Bravo.
Hello, Ashley Bravo. Where are you calling from?
I am from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, how are things in Portland?
It's actually not raining right now.
That's very good.
Yes, it is. It is.
Ashley Bravo is a lovely name. You sound like a military call sign.
Well, I was recently married, so I used to be Ashley Rose.
And you married a gentleman named Mr. Bravo?
Yes, I did.
Okay. That's fine. What is his first name?
His first name is Pablo.
Pablo Bravo.
Pablo Bravo.
Wow.
Bravo, Pablo Bravo. That's a heck of a name.
Awesome. I like that.
It's a great name. I want to marry Pablo Bravo.
Ashley, welcome to the show. Now, Carl Castle is going to read you three limericks about this week's theme, health, fitness, that sort of thing, with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly and two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
Here's your first limerick.
Don Juan knew what led to the bed. It wasn't the things that he said, but a glance from above made the girls fall in love. It was all in the tilt of his
head?
Yes. Researchers have figured out it's not about supple lips, pretty eyes, or long legs. The key to attractiveness is how you angle your head. Australian scientists say women who tilt their heads forward give off a more feminine vibe, and men who tilt their heads back register a more masculine look. So try it. And some of you, the key may be tilting your head all the way down till it's hidden in your shirt. Or perhaps if you're bald like me, you can draw a more attractive face on the top of your head. A little George Clooney mask right there. It's like, oh. You guys are ladies, men. Has this worked for you? Look, because the idea is that you look down, sort of tilt your head back, and you look down as if you're looking at them.
Well,
from
I have to do it now. I have progressive lenses in my glasses.
Yeah.
So if you stand too close, I do that. Naturally.
Yeah.
I'm pretty paranoid about nose hair, so I would never tilt my head back. And I have a prominent nose, but I would never proffer my nose, my nasal cavity to a woman.
This doesn't make any sense to me. So if the guy is tilting his head back,
yeah,
the woman is trying to look cute, tilting her head forward. How do they, her eyes ever...
Yeah, basically, he's having a conversation with the ceiling tile, she's talking to his navel.
Yeah.
All right, here actually is your next limerick.
I woke with a stranger named Olga, both with headaches, both wearing a toga. But I think we'll endure with this hangover cure. Just start stretching and doing some...
Yoga!
Yes! We also would have accepted yoga. The New York Times says yoga may help a hangover. While some poses, particularly those which bring the head below the waist, may increase head pounding, others help blood flow and oxygen intake. One yoga instructor says some poses, quote, squeeze your organs like a wet sponge. And if you're hungover, that image probably made you throw up and now you feel better. All right, here's your last limerick.
Your beauty salons best beware before I sit down in your chair. My head is quite lush, but will break any brush, for I have uncombable
hair.
Hair, yes. This is known, really. It's a genetic illness. It's called uncombable hair syndrome. There's no cure. It's a condition that causes your hair to be grooved, sort of reinforces it so it stands up and cannot be tamed. If your doctor says to you, you have an incurable genetic disorder, you really want his next words to be, it's uncombable hair syndrome.
The heartbreak,
yes,
of UHS.
The only cure, a hat.
Dreadlocks.
That'll do it, I guess. Carl, how did Ashley do in our quiz?
Well, she won our prize because Ashley had 3 correct answers.
Well done, Ashley. Wow. Or should I say, bravo.
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 Now it is time for our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Tom Baudet and Peter Gross each has 3 points, and Kyrie O'Connor has 2.
All right. First, we know that Kyrie has 2 points. You're going first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Now, your questions, Kiri, are all about diets. Fill in the blank.
Oh, goody.
Oh. Olympic athletes in ancient Greece ate only meat in what was probably the earliest version of the blank diet.
Atkins.
Right. After losing 245 pounds eating only at their sandwich shops, college student Jared Fogle became a national spokesman for blank.
Subway.
Right. After unsuccessfully trying numerous diets, Today Show weatherman Al Roker finally had blank surgery.
Bariatric.
Yeah, gastric bypass surgery to show her audience how much weight she had lost on a liquid protein diet. Blank brought out a wheelbarrow filled with 67 pounds of fat.
Oprah.
Yes. Although it does facilitate weight loss, no one has had long-term success with the breatharian diet in which you live on nothing but blank.
Breathing air.
Right. The Jenny Craig diet plan faced some controversy when it hired former White House intern Blank to be its spokesperson.
Monica Lewinsky.
Yes. A shake for breakfast, a shake for lunch, and a sensible dinner was the slogan for the diet drink known as Blank.
Slim Fast?
Yes. In an effort to help a citywide weight loss initiative, in 2008, the Oklahoma City Mayor's Office offered a free blank to any citizen trying to lose weight.
I have no idea.
A free Taco Bell taco.
Oh.
What's better to reward dieters for their months of restraint and deprivation than a tasty, fat-laden taco? The program was a success, despite the fact that Oklahoma City's officials didn't stop to think that free tacos are basically an undo button for diets. Next up, Oklahoma City plans to reward people who quit drinking with free tequila shots. Carl, how did Kiri do? Pretty well, I thought.
Yeah, very fine round, Peter. Kiri had 7 correct answers for 14 more points.
Well done.
She now has 16 points and the lead.
Formidable.
All right.
Okay, Patrick.
We flipped a coin. Tom has elected to go next. Your questions, Tom, are all about junk food. Fill in the blank. In 1985, Peter Jennings interrupted a broadcast of General Hospital to tell viewers that the old version of the soft drink blank was coming back.
Coke.
Right. In 2010, KFC introduced the Double Down, a new sandwich that used pieces of blank instead of bread.
Oh, chicken.
Right. Until it was marketed as being used on NASA flights in 1966, sales of blank breakfast drink were quite poor.
Tang.
Right. A British court ruled in 2008 that Pringles potato chips should not be subject to special taxes because the snack is really only 42% blank.
Potatoes.
Right. Introduced in 2006, it didn't take long before top 10 grossest candy lists included Cap Candy Company's candy blank.
Top 10 grossest candy lists?
Yes.
Boogers and snot.
No. They're called Lick Your Wounds Candy Scabs.
Oh, that's even worse.
In 2007, an Iowa man was arrested for hitting his dad with a bag of blank, causing his father to be covered in orange dust.
Oh, Cheetos.
Right, nationwide shortages and rationing. In 2009, forced some fans to temporarily let go of their blank.
Let go of their egos.
Yes, in 2010, an FDA recall due to contamination shocked fans of the blank candy bar.
Contamination.
Yes.
I've got to guess. The Payday.
No, the toxic waste brand Nuclear Sludge Cherry Chew Bar. They thought it'd be fun for kids if they named it Toxic Waste, but they should have stopped before actually making it out of toxic waste. The makers of the bar were forced to issue a recall due to high lead content. Oddly, their other product, the Lick the Walls Lead Poisoning Brownie, is safe to eat. I don't know why.
Made in China, I assume.
Yes,
right?
Of course. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, but Kiri still has the lead with 16 points.
So Peter will have to do particularly well to take this, am I right?
How many do I need? Because I calibrate my performance to just get one shy of victory.
All right. You need 7 correct answers.
Six it is.
There you go. Peter, this is for the game. Your questions are all about games and sports. In 2006, USA Today reported that because they're afraid children will get hurt chasing each other, schools are beginning to ban the game blank.
Tag?
Right. One of the earliest video games, the two-dimensional tennis game called Blank, was so popular it spawned sequels.
Pong.
Right. The sandwich was invented in the 1700s when the Earl of Sandwich did not want to leave his blank game.
Chess?
No, card game. Children are encouraged to throw balls as hard as they can in an attempt to hit other children in the often traumatic game blank.
Really? Dodgeball.
Yes. Look, it hurt. It hurt bad. In 2009, a scandal involving performance-enhancing drugs erupted in the high-stakes world of blank.
Poker.
Chess.
That's what I said before, though. Count it.
No. Team figure skating is one of the new events proposed for the 2014 Winter Blank.
Olympics.
Right. In October 2010, a small Wisconsin boy became the latest child who needed to be rescued after climbing inside a blank.
M.C. Escher painting.
A claw machine game. A Connecticut man on workers' comp after claiming a bad back injury was accused of fraud when he was seen blanking.
Doing the backstroke.
No, running a 40-yard dash in a dress in order to win Hannah Montana tickets.
I should have guessed that.
He sure didn't look injured as he put on a dress and high heels and sprinted 40 yards while carrying an egg on a spoon. The 41-year-old man had claimed he injured his back while lifting a box of toilet paper, which is only slightly less embarrassing than being seen running in drag on the local news, and much less embarrassing than being a 41-year-old male Hannah Montana fan. Carl, did Peter pull it off? Did he do well enough to win?
No, he didn't, Peter. Peter just had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points. So Kerry O'Connor, with 16 points, is this week's champion.
Right. Well done, Kerry.
Thank you.
Thank you. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists what will be the next disorder we'll discover. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Intel Corporation in recognition of NPR's ongoing commitment to science and technology coverage. The Pew Charitable Trust, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems at pewtrust.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Nick Park. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Thanks to Patrick Murray and Arnie Seipel, and also to the crew at the Arsht Center here in Miami. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. With special thanks this week to Tricia McKinney. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what disorder will we discover next? Mr. Tom Baudet.
In a not altogether terrible development, we will see the onset of affable bowel syndrome.
Kerry O'Connor.
Twitter compulsive disorder. The need to obsessively count the number of characters in everything you say and stop when you get to...
And Peter Gross.
People will be stricken with Lunchausen syndrome, in which they pretend to be hungry for lunch in order to get attention.
Well, if any of those get diagnosed, panel, we'll ask you about it. On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Kerry O'Connor, and Peter Gross. Thanks to Rick Lewis and everyone at WLRN Miami. Thanks to our fabulous audience here at the beautiful Adrian Arsht Center in Miami, Florida. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you again next week. This is NPR.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
The Nashville Symphony presents the SunTrust Classical Series, featuring Tianwei Yang Returns, January 5th, 6th, and 7th at Skirmerhorn Symphony Center. Only in her mid-20s, Tianwei Yang has already earned a reputation as a master of the violin repertoire, and she returns to perform French composer Édouard Lalo's lively Symphonie Espagnole. The program includes the score for Igor Stravinsky's ballet Petrushka,